CBSi in the world, I'm John Batchelor. Mary Kissel, the Executive Vice President of Stevens Incorporated, former Senior Advisor to the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. We turn the energy story from regarding West to regarding East. In these last days, there's been incomplete but amazing reporting from China of rolling blackouts and of anecdotes of manufacturers in Guangdong and other significant provinces being told to go off the energy grid for X number of days per week. The limitations here are shocking. There is no one explanation. The authorities in Beijing have offered the transition to green. They've offered the possibility that the factories didn't anticipate the demand. They've offered the question, the possibility that this is COVID-related. There are a mixture of stories here, but the fact is that China right now is experiencing an energy shortfall that was not anticipated. Amazing, given the planning that goes on in Beijing. But in any event, Mary, my information is that Russia is the source of energy for China as well as Europe if all goes according to plan. The puzzling question is, does this flip the lead in this relationship, this dynamic duo that has emerged over these last years, Russia commanding energy riches and China finally acknowledging that it is energy poor?
Well, I mean, China has known and worried for a long time about its lack of energy resources. And let's add the Islamic Republic of Iran to that equation, because the Biden team has lifted some restrictions on China trading with Iran in that way, which I think is counterproductive. Again, it reduces our leverage on both of those actors. There's also, of course, Australia with its supply of minerals to China. But look, China will do whatever it takes to prevent domestic unrest, and you just can't have energy blackouts in the middle of a cold winter. So I think, you know, you're seeing them scrambling for resources now because they're anticipating the problems that are to come in the coming months. Now, how Russia plays that, they'll play it to their advantage. They'll charge as much as they want. They'll use it maybe to trade for other aspects of the relationship that they desire. But, you know, again, none of this is good, not just for China, but for the rest of the world. You know, if you're paying more for energy prices, you're raising the price of goods, you're raising the price of exports. I just think that we're in the calm before the storm, John. You can't see these energy prices going up, inflation going up, rampant spending. This is just not a formula for growth, and it's certainly not a formula for stability in the coming year.
Again, COP26 in weeks' time, and we have these headlines within these hours from Reuters. China liberalizes coal-fired power pricing to tackle energy crisis. The gist of this is that China suddenly discovers capitalism again. If you put coal on the market, the users will pay for it depending upon their own economies, and therefore there's no particular favorism for state-owned enterprise over private, if that's what China intends. It looks like they've done the first part, which is market conditions. I don't know about the second part, which is either subsidies or leaning on private manufacturers. However, this points out to another story, Mary, that we've talked about over the years. China's non-transparent. There's no imagining that it's going to suddenly become transparent. What does that mean for the government of China, the Xi Jinping and the Central Committee? What does that mean for the people of China trusting the central government?
Well, it's like every other totalitarian regime. They try to maintain this strict control of information flows, not just domestically, but internationally. That covers up an enormous amount of corruption. I'd recommend the book Red Roulette to every single one of your listeners by Desmond Shun. It's really one of the first comprehensive, easy reading accounts of just how corrupt their system really is. And corrupt systems are inherently fragile systems. And when you have the world's second largest economy operating in that way, you know, trading favors for the party elites, squirreling away money in undisclosed locations around the world, sucking in Western investors as part of these schemes, whether they know it or not, keeping double books. You know, this is a very important thing to watch, because what happens in China will impact the global economy. I mean, look, we'd all be much better off if it were a free nation like, you know, Taiwan, where you had a free press and independent boards of directors and all of the rest. And maybe someday it will be. But as of today, unfortunately, it isn't.
Again, we're coming to COP26. And the reason I bring it up repeatedly is because this is not a clean form of energy. They're going to release the factories to rent or to lease from the coal. And they don't mean Australian coal, because they embargoed that some time ago, although they released what they had embargoed or locked up. They mean their dirty coal. And so China is presenting a face to the world that is not believable, Mary. And I don't know if there's – let's go to Europe, because we know the American scene here. There's ambiguity all the time. But in Europe, Mary, Europe is ready to face up to the demands of switching to a green economy. Does that mean it's ready to confront China and not duck behind America anymore?
Well, I think, you know, the important theme that you're highlighting is that if you really care about the environment, you cannot ignore China's vast pollution of the air and of its water. And if you care about carbon emissions, you know, China is really the key. And you also just can't trust the Communist Party to fulfill any of the pledges that it makes internationally. They just, I'm not saying that, you know, because I don't like, you know, the Chinese people. I love the Chinese people, but the Chinese Communist Party is a different matter, and they have a track record that you can look at. So COP, that meeting is useless if you don't hold China to account for its environmental violations.
And Europe in general, let's put both together. Is Europe ready to confront both China and Russia as bad actors? Or
no,
are we looking at the future now, Mary? Is this the best we can hope from Europe?
They're not. I mean, you saw the French foreign minister, Bruno Le Maire, come out in recent days and say the difference between the United States is that the U.S. wants to confront China and Europe wants to cooperate with it. They still believe that there's some kind of middle road, but the reality is that there are domestic political pressures here, and you cannot have British citizens, for instance, without power or gas. There'll be calls for change, and there'll be some politician that will take advantage of that. But, you know, for all of the Europeans who want to hew this middle ground, you know, it's not really their choice. It's also China's choice. And that's the part of the equation that I think they're missing.
Mary Kissel, the Executive Vice President of Stevens Incorporated, former Senior Advisor to the Secretary of State. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.